Hey guys, today's episode of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. After Show is sponsored by Rush. Directed by top action filmmakers Corridor Digital, it's a story of soldiers fighting against all odds in a war-torn nation. Starring Steven Ogg of Grand Theft Auto V and The Walking Dead, as well as Lou Ferrigno Jr. The first episodes are live and free on the Go90 app and at their website, www.go90.com. Go check it out as soon as possible. Now let's start the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. After Show for Season 4, Episode 3, Blackout.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome back to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. After Show. My fellow agents, oh my god, I'm excited.
This is a great episode,
This was a great episode. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. Thank you so much for joining us. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at ThatZachWilson. Jessica Glenn.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Welcome to Boys Night over here at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
You can find me at JessKlein1. That's JessKlein, the number one. I'm super excited about talking about everything Marvel, all we're talking about today, everything we'll talk about in the future. Let's get into it, man.
Yeah, Megan Salinas and Joyce Ujiri are on assignment in the field. Yeah. They're handling some problems. But don't go away, because we are going to be joined in about 20 minutes or so into the show. We're going to be joined by Anne Foley, and if you don't recognize that name, you should know it, because she is the costume designer for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's going to be calling in and talking to us about everything that's gone into the costumes for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. over the years, how it's evolved, how going into Ghost Rider,
Pretty cool.
Of this stuff. We're very excited to have her calling in, and so stick around for that. But before we get there, we got to talk about this episode.
Let's get into this.
Jesse, what'd you think of tonight's episode?
This was some of the best fight choreography we've seen in a long time for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, man.
That scene at the like hotel lobby, and then the fight in front of the EMP, like really showing like some cool like team moves going on between like Yo-Yo, Mac, and like Coulson with just his club hand, because his mechanical hand didn't work, so he's just clubbing people with it. And then we even get some Fitz action going on. We saw last season that he had some action in him. We get to see him in the field doing some awesome stuff.
Yeah. The whole Blackout storyline,
yeah,
was phenomenal, because the action sequence when they get into the hotel,
yeah,
is one of the best ones since that single shot Quake fight scene.
Yeah.
From was it last year or
I
season?
Think it was the season before that.
Was it season 2?
Yeah.
You all know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, that one was amazing.
Yeah, it was season 2, and it was just the coordination here. I love like Coulson fighting with his balled up like
yes,
semi
the club hand.
The club hand. But yeah, real exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the top. So we opened up this episode with the inhuman, like the shadowy figure guy comes up.
Yeah.
And it's claiming to be from the Inhuman Resistance.
Yeah.
Did you think at least at the top, like when it first started, did you think that this was Inhumans?
No. I've read way too many X-Men comic books where, and I know we're not supposed to say it, but they're basically using Inhumans as a stand-in for mutants in the Marvel universe right now. So I've read way too many of those X-Men comic books where like enhanced people or people with machines pretend to be mutants in order to get people to think that they're mutant terrorists attacking. And I was like, oh, this is definitely the Watchdogs. And they're just representing the Inhumans. I did not even think about the fact that the Watchdogs are using the registration, though. Like, that thing was insane, that 17 Inhumans worldwide died during the blackouts because they were using the Inhuman registry to, like, hunt them down and find them in the cities that were blacked out.
I mean, that's what's so scary about the Sokovia Accords and the forced, like, Inhuman registration.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has sort of revealed is that the Sokovia Accords are much more in depth than what they were presented as in Civil War.
Yeah.
Because in Civil War, what they told, like, Cap and the rest of them is, like, if you don't sign, then you retire. But they weren't forcing them necessarily to, like, register themselves on a list the way that, like, the Superhuman Registration Act was in the Civil War comic. But what this is saying is that in humans, like, if you exist, you have to, you're expected to register with the Sokovia Accords.
And every time you move, you have to check in with whatever agency is keeping track of it.
It's almost,
and
it's like
letting them know you're moving.
It's like the sex offender registry. Like, I mean, how deep does it go? Like, I'm assuming you don't have to go, like, door to door telling people.
No, but I think it's like you have to, like, I think, like, yeah, the sex offender registry, or, like, if you're on parole or something like that, where you, like, have to check in with, like, whoever your state-appointed...
Parole's probably a better...
Your state-appointed inhuman officer is.
Yeah.
And you have to check in with them and be like, hey, by the way, my sister's having a wedding in Miami. I'm going to be there. And then they're like, okay, we'll place you now. You're in Miami. And then they know that.
Yeah. It's horrifying because what it means is that, like, you don't have a choice. Like, you're forced to register. And the problem, as this what this showed, is that if the Sokovia Accords is in conjunction with the UN.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they're not like SHIELD. You oversee all of this.
No.
Like, you are in charge of the inhuman registration, like, list. And all of that, it's just in what this one agency, and we trust you to do it. It sounds like there are multiple agencies across the world that all have access to this list.
Yeah.
Who knows? Like, every country may have access to this list.
I believe they do. I think they were saying worldwide, that was what the 17 body count was. It wasn't in the United States. It was in the entire world, which means, like, probably in the United States, like, CIA, FBI, maybe even local law enforcement might know what the... like, what inhumans might be in their neighborhood. But then that means, you know, whatever that is in France, that's whatever their, like, version of, you know, like, the local law enforcement kind of registry is there. And then if you go to Africa and, like, into different countries within there, then, like, maybe per country, like, that's... it gets messy, like, the further down that rabbit hole you go.
Yeah, because, I mean, what happened here is that somebody just got a hold of... it could just be one copy of the list from, like, a small country.
Yeah.
But that a small country with lack security or just not as good encryption, any of that, means that the list is out there for whatever hackers... we want to see it. And as we see towards the end, like, even more powerful people have just gotten access to it. Because, like,
Senator.
It's more eyes that are just available to see this stuff.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's that quote, and it's a good quote, but it's like, bad things happen when people are put on lists.
Yeah.
When innocent people are put on lists, like, bad things happen.
Yeah. It's scary to think about. I mean, like, chat, I'm curious, because I've got you guys live in the chat.
Yeah,
I see you guys there. I'm curious if you would register in, if, like, the government's forced, would you, like, go on the run, or would you register?
Well, I mean, I think you and I both have a very unique perspective that we're both Jewish.
Yeah.
And I'm averse to, like, registering like, based off of something that you can't control like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're using very strongly,
like, an analogy?
Yeah.
Is that what you're
They're making it a very strong analogy, for, like, what's happening, with, the way the mutants were for, gays and all that in the 60s.
Yeah, so I get what you're going for. Like, I think yes, right now Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the zeitgeist right now, there's a lot of talk about, like, for instance, a Muslim registry, because people are worried about them, whether or not that's founded in fact. And it's, like, not something that I think we should get into on the show, but it is, like, something that Marvel has consistently throughout the years taken something that the culture is worried about, something that the culture is talking about, the zeitgeist, and used it to tell stories within their shows, within their comic books. when, you know, the X-Men came out, very clearly it was about segregation in the world and the fight for civil liberties for black people. It was Professor X was Martin Luther King and Magneto was Malcolm X. And then as it's progressed right now, the X-Men are much more of an analogy for gay, lesbian, trans rights, that kind of stuff. They use it as like... In some X-Men books right now, it's even like when you are a mutant, you come out as a mutant, which is basically a one-to-one analogy. And I think right now they're using this registry to kind of talk about and bring up ideas that are happening in the world right now.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect analogy, but it is definitely starting that conversation, which, you know, I think is important. And Marvel has consistently done that throughout the years. So...
Yeah,
I think it's in line with Marvel.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just dealing with some behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, I could tell.
but there's a lot of really cool stuff like here happening. What did you think of Yo-Yo at the top of this with her cool friends?
I mean, it's cool seeing Yo-Yo not like when we first met Yo-Yo, she was like this resistance fighter and she was like very serious and very severe. And it's cool seeing her with her friends. And I like that Mac pops up on her phone and her friends are kind of, you know, like, hey, who's this guy? We should call him up and that kind of stuff. I thought Yo-Yo overall this entire show was really interesting and had a really interesting arc. I liked seeing, like, it's like, come on, Mac, just make a move already. Like, she's asking, like, that point when she's like, there's nothing between us anyway. It's like, yeah, but there should be. It feels like there should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like there should be.
Because there is.
Crazy kids.
Also, it was cool seeing her superpowers in that scene where the watchdogs had them all. And he was like, yeah, well, let's see this bullet disappear. And then the gun just, like, pops out of his hands. Like, that was really fun. Yeah.
And she's going to make something disappear.
Yep.
That sounded dirty. It wasn't. She made his gun disappear.
Yeah.
Also sounded dirty. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Zach, stop.
I'm just digging it deeper.
Yeah.
Damn it. Did it again. I want to... one thing, I messed up the title at the top of the show.
Oh, yeah?
I said Blackout. Oh. Uprising.
Okay.
It's my bad. So Coulson and the director sort of have it out here. Because Coulson, like, at the end of last episode, he really wanted to... He wanted to follow May wherever they were going, and this is his first instance of being shut out.
Yeah.
And at the tail of last episode, like, we all sort of didn't trust the director anymore, right?
I trusted him. I just thought he was, like, super pragmatic. Like, that's kind of what they're showing. Like, he even says, I'm a straight shooter, like, 20 billion times in this episode. So he's very pragmatic, and I think he does a good job of, like, keeping Coulson in line, where he's like, it's the play you would call, go and take care of this blackout thing. And Coulson basically is like, yep, you're right, and he goes and does it, even though May is dying. Like,
yeah,
I had no idea that May was in such a bad, like, situation until we saw the Triad guy, like, die, like, cardiac arrest, seeing monsters everywhere.
I mean, it seemed like it was just like insanity, where, like, if you took her aside, like, if you put her away, like, she, and as long as she didn't hurt herself, like, keep her restrained, she would be okay.
Yeah,
but clearly she's not.
And apparently that they're what's happening is they're in the living nightmare, a waking nightmare. And to that I would say, in order to help them, you should get the god of fear to help you out. I'm talking about Phobos and the Secret Warriors.
Oh my god, do you think they're going there?
I don't think they're going there. I don't think they're going to introduce the fact that the Greek pantheon...
But what if they did?
I would tear this table up from its roots and throw it through the... I would throw it through the wall.
You'd go Hercules on it, you're saying.
I would go Hercules. If Ares and his son showed up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I would freak out for days.
Here's the thing, though, is we're entering more of the, like, mystical elements of the show.
Yeah.
oh, what if that's next year? What if, assuming we get a season five, what if that's next year to line up with Thor Ragnarok?
I would, again, tear this table up.
All right. This is not a theory. It's more of a, like, hey, Marvel, if you're listening,
yeah,
this is a suggestion for you.
If you want to
let's say maybe in the gladiatorial arena that Thor and Hulk are fighting in,
if you wanted in Thor God Ragnarok, of War.
If that's all going down,
yeah,
and maybe they run into like some dude named Hercules at that arena, and that just like subtly sets up a pantheon that could then have this dude named Phobos showing up on S.H.I.E.L.D. as your tie-in, I'm just saying, you can have that idea.
Marvel, if you want to see a grown man eat his chair, this is the direction you would get. Like,
and with any other person, I would say that's just a hyperbole.
Inhalation. But I would eat my chair.
But I've seen Jesse do weirder things.
I've done worse things than eat a chair.
He'll do it. I'll have him do it live on stage, too.
Yeah,
we have that power.
I would do it in front of 90 people.
Or we can broadcast it in front of 116 people who are live right now.
Yeah, exactly. That would be amazing. But yeah, May went from being like, oh, she's kind of freaked out and weird and like attacking her teammates to like in this episode, she died, but she was also, before they induced death onto her, she was just like catatonic. Like,
yeah.
Like,
and we'll get into everything with May and Radcliffe and Simmons in a little bit. And then we still got to talk about Daisy and Gabe and Robbie.
Yeah, sure.
But just like when they got to when like Coulson and Fitzmac, I guess Mac and Cheese plus Fitz, is my choice of how to refer to them. But they like
Mac and Cheese with Fitz on the side.
I love Phil Coulson's left hand. By the way, is going to have a field day.
Sure,
with the hand locking up in a blackout.
I'm sure he will.
What do you think of Fitz's like science, his like cork based science experiment?
I don't know if that's how that works.
I was like trying. I'm like, this seems like
I feel like if you were trying to triangulate it, you would have to be outside of the point that you're trying to triangulate. Like they were just in four corners of a room. I feel like you'd have to be in four corners of like Miami. And then, like, figuring it out through there. Like, it feels like four corners of a room would not do the job for triangulation. I mean, I know the pine needle, like, the pine needle compass thing is a real thing that does work. It does show you where true north is. I don't know if that's how you triangulate where an EMP is coming from, though.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if it's messing with magnets... So you think about it that way.
Yeah.
It's creating a magnetic pulse. So it would screw with compasses.
Yeah. But they're trying to triangulate, and they're basically around 20 feet apart from each other. And he's, like, getting degrees, and he, like, did an X marks the spot, but he wasn't at the degrees. Like, it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Whatever. I trust that Fitz figured it out.
Fitz is a better scientist than I am.
They got it. Fitz has got it. But yeah, that fight sequence.
So
like,
cool.
I was amazed to see Fitz fighting in there.
Like I said, last season and like the season before even, like we saw Fitz, you know, getting tussles. So it was cool to see him like be a part of this really fun choreographed team beatdown that they were giving. It was like a video game where you like it's like a fighting video game where you have your allies come in and like a huge assist happens. It was really cool.
But yeah, that was just the way that it came together, because you got like Mac with just the brutal like big guy fight sequence that we're used to in a lot of things like that. You got Fitz with like a couple of smaller things, like the stabbing, like he's more just like tactical with it. Coulson just like very much like using his skills.
And clubbing people with his hand.
But then the way that the camera moved through, I love the directing in this, because the way the camera moved through the fight and then Yo-Yo just like sort of popping in to like disarm in the middle of it felt like such a comic book moment.
It did.
When she like rips away the guns from them.
Yeah.
And starts drop. I love the subtleness of the drop. Her friend, I wanted to just like.
Oh, the one that's getting married? Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. Like, for all she knew, it was Inhumans that were, you know, disrupting it and doing the EMP. Like, the general populace thinks that Inhumans attacked.
Yeah. Hi. So, guys, we're being joined now. Anne?
Yeah.
Hi. So we've got Anne Foley, the costume designer for S.H.I.E.L.D. on the line. Anne, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we were just excitedly talking about the fight sequence from tonight's episode.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Totally. It was amazing. We were, during the live tweet, we were getting a kick out of, you know, how much everybody else was loving it, too. And, you know, we always love to use that hashtag Mac attack every time he's got a great fight sequence.
That's a good one.
That's fantastic.
We always refer to whenever Coulson and Mac go on an adventure together, it's Mac and Cheese.
Yep.
Because at one point...
I like that.
At one point in the comics, Coulson's nickname was Cheese.
Yeah, his called name was Cheese.
Yeah, so it's Mac and Cheese.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. I'm going to have to bring that up on set tomorrow.
Please do.
Yeah, please. So we're really excited to have you join us because I think the costumes are something that has always been a standout part of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like since season one, it's always been something that I think has... It's part of seeing a comic book on screen. It comes to the character's look.
Yeah.
One of obviously the character that we most focus on, I think she's like, because she's the one that's changed and evolved the most, is Daisy.
Yeah, definitely.
So
she's really had a great arc.
Yeah. I really wanted to ask you, like, if you could walk us through, like, how do you go about, like, her evolution over, like, now four seasons? Because she's had a unique look every year.
Yeah, I mean, one of the cool things about the show is that each season, for all of the characters, quite frankly, has had its own feeling. And, a big part of that is because we have such fantastic writers on the show, and it's right there on the page, and I just have to follow, you know, what they're giving me. And, and that's the most important thing to me, is to work so closely with the writers and even the actors in creating these character arcs. And I always walk it through with the writers when we're having my costume meeting after we get a new script. And we talk about what's going on in their head, what the backstory is, what, you know, any sort of detail that I can get that I can help tell the story through the clothes. And we've definitely done that with all of them, whether it's Daisy or Fitz and Simmons, who I think have had a pretty dramatic arc as well over the four seasons.
Yeah, they went from being indoor kids to outdoor kids.
Exactly.
And now Simmons.
You've watched them grow up over these four seasons, and their clothes really reflect that emotional space that they're in.
Yeah, that's true. Especially tonight, Simmons, like with her.
Oh, Boss Simmons?
Yeah. Is she actually taller this season? It looks like she's taller.
No. I mean, her shoes have a little bit of a platform on them, so you're getting that illusion, but no, not really.
I mean, we figured maybe Elizabeth Henstridge had, like, a growth spurt.
Yeah, I think I always thought, now, this might tell you how much success I've had in the business world, but I always thought every time you get promoted, you get taller.
Oh, really? Yeah. Maybe. That's a good way to look at it.
So Jesse's very tall, so he must be very successful in his theories.
No, I just started off tall.
So when you're working on a character that is How is it different when you're working on a character that's original, like someone like Mac, versus someone who is pre-established? Like obviously this season the big one is Robbie Reyes. Is one more difficult than the other? What's the difference in the approach?
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, the approach is almost the same. It's kind of what I said before. It's right there on the page. When it's an existing character from the comics, I go straight to the comics and I look for any information that I can get there, whether it's, you know, backstory stuff, or even if it's the costume that they're wearing in the comics. If it's a character that's unique to our show that was created for our show by our writers, then I talk to them about backstory. Who this person was, what can you tell me? That's kind of, you know, that we did that with Raina is a really great example. Mm-hmm. She was somebody that was developed specifically for the show. And it was all about just who is she? And, you know, when they first told me about her, they were like, okay, we're going to have this character and she's going to be known as the girl in the flower dress. And every time you see her, she's going to have on that same print. But maybe it changes a little bit every time, you know, she's in a different situation. So we started playing with the colors, and depending on her mood or whatever was going on in that episode, that's, you know, we would switch the colors around, but it was always that same pattern, so that every time you saw her, you recognized her immediately by that pattern. So that's sort of how I try to approach it.
I have a follow up, real quick. That's really cool, by the way. That Raina thing is awesome. I didn't even like notice it, has there been a character that is from the comic books that they've like said, okay, here's this character, that you've seen their costume and been like, how am I going to do this? like Mr. Hyde or something like that?
Well, I mean, I think that it's always an interesting challenge to look at the comic characters and think about how we are going to bring them into our universe of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And have it make sense within our universe. And our universe is sort of more tactical in nature. And so I look at the comic books and think about what elements from that specific character are the most important elements. And then we try to work that in, but, you know, have it, you know, have that more tactical kind of feeling that's going to make sense on our show.
Oh, very cool.
So because they're agents and they are going out on missions. So, you know, in Mockingbird's case, she had a white panel that went down the center of her body, and I wanted to change it to a medium, you know, darkish gray, so she wasn't so much of a target.
Oh.
Because that's what that made sense for our show.
Yeah, and her costume was one that we got really excited about because it didn't look exactly like the comics, but I thought it made her so real to this world.
Yeah, she looked like a secret agent. Yeah.
But still comic booky.
Yeah, I mean,
in that way.
No yellow goggles, but
yeah, and I want them also to feel like, you know, they could be fighting with the Avengers as well. I'm such a big fan of the MCU, and you know, it would be great if we could see, you know, Quake or Mockingbird or May or, you know, any of our characters fighting with the Avengers. And I always keep that in the back of my head. That's like my little secret wish. You know?
You're not alone.
Yeah.
I know, I'm sure. But, you know, that's the world that I'm trying to sort of fit into and, you know, keep it all kind of connected, so to speak.
Yeah, is a character from the MCU something, is that like something you guys like really, or from the wider MCU, I should say, really that you guys really look forward to, like when Lady Sif shows up, or is that more of just like stuff sort of comes with her, like arrives from the set of Thor?
Yeah, no, the stuff comes with her. I mean, that's something I don't need to touch because it's already fabulous. there's nothing I could do to make that costume more amazing. So yeah, we were lucky enough to get that costume for Marvel when Jamie came on to play Lady Sif. But then the second time she came, I actually got to put her in civilian clothes, which was really fun. It's like, okay, so if Lady Sif is walking around, you know, what does she wear in regular clothes wise? And that was a blast. That was so much fun. That was one of my most fun fittings.
What's been the hardest character to design for? I was looking at a picture earlier today of Hive. That must have been just like, I could only imagine there were like 10 different, like a ton of concepts for what to do with a guy that's just a bundle of fungus.
Well, believe it or not, there wasn't. That was probably one of the simpler designs that I've had to do on the show. It was great because, again, when I was talking to the writers about how they wanted to approach this, you know, we came up with this idea. He has all of Malik's money, so and he is he's an inhuman. What would he do if he had access to all the money in the world? And we wanted it to have a little bit of an otherworldly feeling to it, but at the same time grounded in reality here on, you know, here on Earth. So that one wasn't too bad. I actually had a blast with it and was so pleased with the way it turned out. Probably one of the more challenging ones, believe it or not, was Raina. Not just due to the volume of things that we had to make for her over two seasons.
Sure. Yeah.
I probably had enough of those flower dresses to start an entire line at Bloomingdale's.
But all of them had tiny little holes in them.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And, well, and that was really interesting, too. So when she had her transition, you know, it was like, okay, so where are we going to take this? What are we going to do with it? And I found this amazing floral lace. And we backed it with this red fabric so that you could see the flowers come out in it. It's super subtle, but they were still there. Even though she had transformed, she still was the girl in the flower dress, and I wanted to hang on to that little character piece. So, it was challenging with her because we printed all of that fabric. Mm. And so every time, you know, we knew we had another episode, it was like printing more fabric and coming up with designs. So, yeah, we had quite a lot of flower dresses going on back in my workroom.
Yeah. I'm curious, and this is partially because for those of you who may be listening to the audio version of the podcast, you can't see, I'm wearing like a custom, my friend custom made me a Ghost Rider jacket because I got so excited about the jacket being actually on TV this season. How do you guys?
I saw that. It looks fantastic. Well done.
Thank you. Well, all kudos to my friend Lauren. But I'm curious, how do you guys feel when you see like the outfits that you've designed being cosplayed, like at conventions and all that? Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself nitpicking them?
It's
like
so
that's not how that goes, or is it just more exciting?
It's great. I mean, it's the ultimate compliment. I could not be more excited and flattered, to be perfectly honest. And I will tell you that the cast absolutely loves it. Chloe was just telling me today on set about all of the Quake, you know, cosplayers that came up and saw her at New York Comic Con.
Awesome.
And it means so much to her. And it means so much to me as well. It's wonderful. And I love anytime I see anybody cosplaying any of the characters from the show, whether it's Daisy, whether it's Mae, Simmons. Some of my favorites are actually Fitzsimmons from season one. I got to see them at San Diego Comic-Con in their little lab coats together. And, you know, it's great. It's just wonderful. And they're so inventive. I think that's one of my most favorite things, is to see how they put their costumes together, how they construct them, and, you know, the inventiveness behind it.
Now, Zach does have this custom-made one, but the first episode of the season, we took white duct tape and made the outline. It looks great.
Whatever it takes.
On camera, it didn't read too bad.
On camera, it was fine.
couldn't get too close to
it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Before you go, I want to ask one more of a fan, just because I think you guys are just as much fans as we are. If you could take like any character from either the MCU or the comics,
yeah,
I'll broaden it. that you could create a costume for this project, what would you do?
Oh, that is so easy. Squirrel Girl. I'm obsessed with Squirrel Girl.
Yes.
And I'm obsessed with the idea of Anna Kendrick playing her.
It's such perfect casting.
It's ridiculously perfect. Yeah. unless you're going to get, who was at from Comic-Con this year? What's his name? Jack Harkness is who he is in my mind.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. I'll never remember his name.
Yeah, either way.
Squirrel Girl's an awesome answer.
I think we'll see her. John Barrowman. John Barrowman went to the Eisners this year, part of it dressed as Squirrel Girl.
No way. Oh, my God. I'd love to see that.
It's amazing. I recommend checking that out. But, I would love to see. I think Squirrel Girl could find a place on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, like it have a West Coast or like a Great Lakes Avengers moment.
That's the
right.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah,
let's make that happen, guys. Tweet it out.
Okay. Squirrel Girl, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Hashtag it.
Yep.
I'm trusting you fans to carry it through.
Also, Tippy Toe. Make sure he's also an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Can we get him a little badge?
Yeah.
Love that, yes.
But Anne, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about the costumes. Is there anything else that you're like excited about as we wrap out here that like, we should be looking forward to?
Oh, I wish I could tell you, but I can't. I will end up in S.H.I.E.L.D. jail, I will tell you that the scripts that I've been getting are absolutely mind-blowing. They are so much fun, and I get excited every time one lands on my desk. So I think you guys are going to be in for a crazy ride this season. So fasten your seatbelts.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Do you have any other projects or anything that you're working on outside of the crazy schedule of a weekly TV show?
Oh, my God, no. I mean, I can't even catch up on any television. I am so far behind. There's so many shows that I'm dying to see that I haven't seen yet. So
don't tweet her Breaking Bad spoilers. Please don't.
Oh, my God. I know. I haven't even watched Stranger Things yet. I'm dying to see it. So that's basically what I'm trying to do next is catch up on my TV.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. People can find you on Twitter at afoley24. Is that right?
Yep. And on Instagram at ann.foley.
Ann.foley. All right. Well, awesome. Ann, thank you one more time. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're going to get back to talking. We still got a bunch to talk about from this episode.
Yeah.
Because we haven't even gotten to talk about Ghost Rider yet.
Oh, God. Get to it.
All right. Have a great
Thanks,
one.
Guys. Yeah. Thanks
thank
for
you
having
so much.
Me.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
That was delightful.
It was delightful.
All right,
Megan and Joyce are so jealous right now.
Yeah, they are. They're stewing wherever they are out in the world. I hope you guys in the chat enjoyed that. All right, not a lot of time.
Quick hits.
Let's dive back in. All right, May and Simmons ran out to May to save him, and where Radcliffe is there with Ada, and he stores her in the back room.
Yeah. I pointed out that we're also watching Westworld, so seeing Ada was kind of really weird.
Yeah, it's a little like there's a lot of robots right
there's
now.
There's a lot of AI, robots.
A lot of AI and time travel on television right now. But I love the idea of scared to death. Brings sort of a scientific meaning to that word, because the idea that you could get scared to death is something that like people just say, but to put it to something real.
Yeah, it sounds like something like you're
real.
This ghost real. It sounds like something your aunt would say, like, "Oh my goodness, you almost scared me to death." Like, but to have like a scientific explanation, I thought it was really interesting that when Radcliffe came up with the solution, he talked about it like it was a computer, because Radcliffe is literally making a computer mimic biological functions, and now he's taking biological functions and comparing it to a computer. He's like, it's like if you had a computer that had too many viruses and it had like, you know, malware that was clogging it up, you would do a system reboot and a system restore.
Yeah.
And that's what he compared May's brain to. So it's it's just like one of those things where the writing, it's like, oh, of course Radcliffe is thinking, like, yeah, brains are computers, like, which they kind of are, but like, it's such a Radcliffe explanation, because literally behind his bookshelf, he has a computer that he has made into a almost biological being.
Yeah, I was almost, I think, a little disappointed that he brought out the energy device from Ada and not Ada herself.
Yeah.
I was, like, only because, like, it was set up so perfectly, because they showed us the glowing reactor in her chest.
Yeah.
And like, Simmons is exactly who he's hiding her from.
Yeah.
It would have been an awesome turn for, and maybe we're going to get that at the top of next episode.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what ends up happening. But if like, it's like, what do you do? Who is this naked woman? Like, I don't know, because she's just randomly naked.
Yeah.
Who's this woman? And she just plugs her, like, fingers into the resuscitator. or, like, into the power things that he sticks the reactor into. Or it sticks them into her, like, the middle of her chest.
Yeah,
even
or
better.
Something like that, yeah.
And just, like, zaps May alive. Because then, effectively, it becomes this AI saved your friend who is going to die.
But
AI is illegal in the wake of Ultron, and because of what happened there, very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
And banned, so he's breaking a lot of rules. It's an interesting moral dilemma that I think we're going to get.
Yeah. Were you also bothered by how awake and conscious May was after she was brought back from
death? Yeah, she just sort of woke up, and May is a badass.
She is a
badass. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. May is a super badass.
But she was dead for minutes. She was brain dead for minutes.
Yeah, to the point where, like, I'm willing to grant that May has a stronger threshold for losing oxygen towards the brain. So, like, no, having no permanent brain damage is something I can actually totally accept with her as a person.
Yeah.
And
also as, like, a storytelling device. We don't want May to, like, forget what
numbers
are.
We did that with Fitz.
Yeah.
And we did that the storyline of brain damage so perfectly with Fitz. I wouldn't want to step on that by doing it again. But
she woke up.
She would have been groggy. Like, when you black out, which is effectively what happened in essence to her.
I mean,
like, through all the fear and everything.
Yeah.
I think the idea is she wakes up and she doesn't remember any of that.
Yeah. I mean, she woke up easier than I do from a nap. Like, it takes me a couple seconds to be like, okay, this is what's going on. All right, I'm not dreaming right now.
Are you kidding me? It took me half an hour to get out of bed this morning.
Yeah, and she woke up and she was like, whoa, what's going on? What's going on? Get these things off
now,
me.
Now, granted, you and I are not May.
No, we are not. The two of us together do not equal one May. But still, I would have liked...
One half of us also, like, same thing. Like,
I still would have liked something, like, just like a moment of freaking out or something like that. You know, or grogginess. But I do think that they are going to lead to the fact that ostensibly Ada's, what makes Ada Ada is what saved May.
Yeah. And I think that will be a part of the conversation, no doubt. And this is just, unscientifically, Puck J in the chat roll says, I've seen someone come back like that.
Oh.
It was freaky.
Right.
So, like, maybe it is something about, like, I mean, she did, in fairness, just get a jolt of electricity through her chest.
That's true.
So maybe that, like, when we were both, like, waking up from naps and stuff, like, we weren't, like, waking up to an electric shock.
Oh, that's not how you wake up from naps?
I mean,
I had
that alarm clock for a little while. I chose to put it away.
I only nap in bathtubs that have a toaster teetering over the edge.
Oh my god. I had a joke. It's not for this show, but if you've watched another show that's Marvel, you'd understand. I'm sorry, I really didn't want to give a spoiler.
Okay, great.
Luke Cage.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I see where you're going.
People are talking about the Simmons hug.
Yeah.
It's cute. All right.
The Simmons hug was cute.
Third
storyline.
Daisy and Ghost Rider and Gabe.
Yeah, I think mostly Daisy and Gabe.
Yeah. And Robbie, I should say, because he didn't really... He only went Fire Eyes, not...
And also made his car hot.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. So, of course, as soon as they start to say, like, I hope it doesn't hit.
Yeah.
Damn it. Why did you open your mouth, Robbie?
Yeah.
Don't you know?
Yeah.
I chastised somebody in the studio for this the other day. They're like, everything seems to be going well today.
Don't say it. Yeah. That hit, and I love that the explanation for the reason why the car worked wasn't because it's demon-possessed, but because it was old enough that the electronics wouldn't be affected by an EMP.
Did they say that?
Yeah.
And I blinked?
Yeah, Daisy said that.
Oh, that's funny.
I know, you got excited because you're like, it's working because of demons, and you're like writing it down as Daisy was like, that makes sense because it's old enough that it wouldn't be affected by the EMP.
It's true. A 69, yeah. Right? 69 Charger wouldn't have any... computerized. It would be all mechanical.
Yeah.
All right. Fine.
Bummer.
But don't they still? They still ran on batteries.
Yeah.
I think it was.
I mean, they didn't say it. They said it makes sense because it was before 1980s.
I think that's Daisy's way of like. Yeah. I stand by what I originally thought it was. I think that's Daisy saying. Oh, it like that's her rationale for it.
Yeah.
Because she is not ready to believe that a demon is running the car.
That's true.
But a demon is running the car.
Yeah.
Because like even older cars still need, like you still have to change out a battery.
Yeah. I don't know if that would be affected by
it. Would. I mean, a battery is electricity. Even if even if it's not something you charge by plugging it in, it's still a battery.
Yeah.
It still runs on electricity.
Yeah, for sure.
Even the old crank-up cars, like, technically ran on electricity.
Yeah.
It's just from a different place.
I don't know enough about EMPs to know if batteries get affected by it.
It's any electronic. Batteries do.
Okay.
Get knocked out. Just like cell phones. Like, any it's the magnets will, like, fry. This is the one thing. Is like, most EMPs will fry electronics.
Gotcha.
As opposed to just turning them off. Now, this is obviously a sci-fi EMP, so all things are out the window.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, I believe in real life it's more of a wave. Like, you turn it on, and it just does it, and then it's done.
Well, they made, Fitz said, like, this is a multiple pulse or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
A continuing pulse.
Yeah. But the way that you saw the lights burst.
Yeah,
that's sure. Like, an EMP, like, breaks the electronics.
Okay.
It completely fries them.
Okay.
At least, I don't know. We're not scientists here, guys. We just think we are.
Yeah. I do not think I am. but anyway, we get this really interesting... We get a good fight with the two of them.
Yeah, with the boys. I thought at first it was going to be... is it Canelo? They seem to be the same, like, sort of makeup of the gang of, like, dicks from the first volume of... All New Ghost Rider.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Who, like, steal Robbie's wheelchair and are just, like, generally nuisances. They join up with storyline, they join up with Hyde.
Yeah.
And his, like, gang and all that.
I thought the discussion that Gabe and Daisy had was really interesting. And I like seeing how Gabe's relationship with Robbie, where he's super protective of him and knows Daisy is Quake and is like, you have to leave her alone because you're bad news.
Yeah, Gabe was just like, no, leave.
Yeah, get out of here.
It's a good...
I thought Gabe was kind of a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that they're protecting each other.
Yeah.
Which is very obviously very different from
the books,
where Gabe is not only physically handicapped, but also mentally handicapped as well. So far I like it, because Gabe is an interesting character.
Yeah.
Instead of just being a device, because if he's mentally handicapped, he sort of becomes more of just a device for Robbie's story.
Yeah.
It becomes harder for him to have a story of his own. Not that mentally handicapped people can't have their own story, but it's a world where there are
monsters
and battles and all this stuff, it's hard for him to have a distinctive emotional arc of his own, the way that to the point where the handicapped to the point where he was in the comics.
It's hard also not to make him a trope. Like, yes, when you're writing for it, when someone has, I think it would be an interesting, I think they could have handled it. I think it would have been an interesting way, and especially since people with mental disabilities are underrepresented in media in general. But I understand why they made it so he did not have that.
Yeah. Real quick, because we got to wrap out.
Yeah.
We won't even play the sound effects. We don't have time. The interview. iTunes. We will shout you guys out next week.
Yeah.
Because we had to trade that for the wonderful interview that we got from Dan Foley. Sure. Next week looks. I called it. Called it so. I'm so excited, and it's on. It's all over Twitter.
Yeah,
I've said it a bunch of times. Looks like Lola's gonna race Ghost Rider's health.
That's awesome, and I loved
the melting guys.
I loved the Senator Nadir, like at the very end, the creepy thing with her brother, who's like encased in stone, might be a inhuman himself.
Not an inhuman. It looks like he was exposed to the Terrigen chemical and didn't live.
Yeah.
And that's why Senator Nadir hates inhumans and is out to get them and is working with the Watchdogs.
Do you think Nadir is an inhuman herself?
No, because if her brother wasn't, then she wouldn't be either.
Unless she took fish oil.
Well, no, because if he didn't transform, it's in the blood, it would have to be both of them. Guys, thank you so much for joining us for the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after show. There's so much to talk about.
If you
missed anything, just go down to the comments on YouTube or hit us up on Twitter. Let us know, because we want to continue this discussion. Let us know what you thought of everything from this episode.
Please do.
Please do. I can't stop talking about it. One more time, because we couldn't bring the show to you without our sponsors, because we bring it to you for free every week. This episode was sponsored by Rush, which was directed by top action filmmakers Corridor Digital. It's a story of soldiers fighting against all odds in a war-torn nation, starring Stephen Ogg of Grand Theft Auto V and The Walking Dead, as well as Lou Ferrigno Jr. The episodes are already live and free if you go to the Go 90 app, and you can go to their website, www.go90.com. Go check it out as soon as possible. Keep checking us out. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, at @ThatZachWilson.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at JessKlein1. That's JessKlein, the number one.
All right, guys, this has been the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. After Show. Thanks for geeking out with us.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only. They do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.